Hi, everyone. Welcome to Nancy's Metaphysical World and More. I'm Nancy. I host the show, and today I have a guest on. I'm very excited to have him on. I'm kind of excited with what we're going to talk about. His name is Paul, and Paul, welcome to the show.
Thank you, Nancy. Glad to be on it.
Now, Paul, you first we're going to talk a little bit about yourself. I want to know a little bit of history about you, kind of how you got into what you do and how it all started. And then we'll go from there, okay?
Okay. You know that my interest in numerology was preceded, of course, by my interest in psychic readings and metaphysics. And I picked up a little paperback book, oh, I don't know how long ago, prior to 1978, actually. And it was, I think, called The World Beyond. And it was all about life hereafter. And for some reason, since I was pondering some moves, I was considering moving out of California, thinking about different career options. And it just occurred to me that in looking for information, I should go to a psychic because at least I could get a quick answer. And then I could evaluate it as to whether I believed it or not. And so I started to investigate psychics. And while I was visiting Arizona, I met a psychic for the first time, really. Not the very best kind, but it was an interesting experience. But during that visit, I went to a bookstore and was not looking for numerology. It had not entered my mind yet. And in walking down an aisle, a little book fell off the shelf and literally hit me, and I grabbed it. And it was a book by D'Amorelli, Richard D'Amorelli. And that book is long since out of print. But something about a reading the value of names and the meaning of names and how to do a chart just absolutely excited me. And so I read the book thoroughly. And the only problem was trying to remember the meaning of the name, of the letters and the numbers. And so I kind of went slow for a few years. And then in 1980, actually, in shortly after 78, I met a wonderful, wonderful lady who was a very fine channel, and I thought I was going to get one more psychic reading. And as it turns out, she was an ascended master herself, and she only channeled ascended masters. And so I sort of got used to speaking week after week after week to some of the highest of the higher essences, like Saint Germain and Augustine and Francis and Maitreya, Hilarion, Katumi, White Eagle, and so on. And so I got used to really pure information. And then along came Pythagoras. He entered a session. And he asked me if I would be willing to write a book about numerology. And I thought, sure. I mean, I don't know enough about it, but I sure will keep learning. And I asked him, I said, okay, if I do this, will you write the preface for me? He said, yes. Are you ready? And so he immediately dictated the entire preface, which is in my book, word for word. And I thought that was really kind of amazing. And I asked him what my connection was with him. And he said that I had been a student of his in approximately 500 BC. And that's when we were first introduced to the numbers. And I made a commitment at that time to come back into an incarnation in the 1900s here. And and do this book, but consciously I had no memory, of course, of it. So that's how I began to do the research. I had no idea it was going to be so extensive. So each time my friend Isabel would channel, I would generally talk to at least one communicator, and many of those times, of course, it was Pythagoras. And so for that portion of the session, I would ask him questions about numerology, and he would give me new information about numerology. And finally, I took all of these cassette tapes, and I transcribed everything on the paper, and then about 3-4 years ago, I finally put them into the computer and wrote the book. I do not call myself a psychic. I'm an intuitive numerologist. But when I'm on the computer, when I'm developing spiritual concepts, then I channel and I put it all on the computer. And that's how I did the book. I just simply did chapter after chapter, hardly ever changing anything except for typos. And so all of these years, since 1980, I have been communicating with Pythagoras and with the ultimate purpose of getting people ready for the new millennium. And the numbers have stronger meanings now than they did, say, 20, 30 years ago. And so these numbers are much more powerful now, and as are the, as you know, the energies for the new millennium. And so that has been my passion all of this time, and I finally, somewhere along the way, managed to get the hang of learning the meaning of the numbers. And so in my book, there was a chapter early on about how to memorize those numbers. Most people, they think of numbers and they think of the thousands of numbers that are out there. And I simplified it by saying, forget about all of the numbers except 1 through 9, because all of the numbers are going to reduce to a single digit except for the master numbers. Mm-hmm. And so I wrote this exercise in which people can ask 6 different questions of themselves each day for a different number. And at the end of 9 days, you've basically gotten the hang of the meaning of these numbers. And once you get past the memory part, then you can have fun with the numbers. And so I started doing little exercises like the personality profile that I have in my book. And I call it there the matrix, in which you simply write numbers into a tic-tac-toe type of grid based on the birth date only, and you get a very quick read on an individual's personality characteristics, probably 12, 15 different aspects. And so when you're having fun, as you know, on your mm-hmm. show, then you learn at the same time. If you're not having fun, then it's a labor to go through all of that.
It's much more to have fun, Paul. Now, the name of your book is Numbers, the Energy Forces in Your Name.
Right.
Okay. Now, I have a couple of questions to ask you, Paul, okay?
Sure.
You know, because I read your book, and it's actually quite good, and it really does help people to understand. And I like numbers. I work well with numbers, but I don't do numbers. Of course, I use the cards, but anybody that knows tarot also knows that it has a lot to do with numerology and astrology. I just don't look at that part of it.
Right.
But for the numbers, okay, you know, everything is broken down from 1 to 9. So if somebody was going to do it, they're going to go start at ABC and they're going to go forward. They're just going to write them out and then just number them 1 to 9. And
mm-hmm.
once they get to 9, they're going to renumber starting over again.
Right.
Okay. And then if somebody does that and they decide to use the little chart that you have that looks like a tic-tac-toe board
mm-hmm.
so that, you know, the people who are listening kind of get a visual of what it is. If they go to put their numbers in there and they start at the very bottom left corner and they start going 1, 2, 3, whatever it is,
right.
upward, okay, 4,
mm-hmm.
9. There's 9 numbers. So if we do a birth date, and I'm going to give you my grand ours because it's a very unique birth date, and then I'm going to ask you, you know, to explain some things, okay?
Sure.
Her birth date is February the 2nd, 2000. So she only has twos and zeros. Okay? Now, because she's got as many zeros as twos, how would you decipher, you know, what the number is? I mean, I would look at it and I'd say it's a triple two or a six, but then there's nothing else to go with it.
That's correct. The three zeros in the 2000 are really quite unique because it's only that one year that we actually have the three zeros. Then we go into 01 and 02 and so on. For the children born in 2000, you have to take a closer look at the numbers in the name because that's where the compensation is. The zeros have a very mysterious quality about them that fills in all of the gaps. And the zeros, of course, are what we call the cosmic gate of God, and they sort of excite all of the numbers around them. The three zeros in this case influence the three twos, and they make them much more powerful than they normally would be. So where the number two is the number of patience and cooperation and quiet diplomacy, and in this case you have three twos, so that means an extremely gifted child who has great sensitivity and has a job to do in the future helping humanity. It's like you can just see the nines that are not there, but they are there. And then we take a look at the life path. So we have a two plus a two plus the two. So the life path number is the number six. So you may as well write the number six in there even though it's not there. So this child is going to help people throughout her life, and along the way is going to fine-tune all of the qualities of the number two. Now, if another child had, say, three twos, but not in the year 2000, let's say it was in the year 1985 somehow or other, based on the month and the day, that child might not be as gifted as your granddaughter. That child might instead show extreme emotional difficulties in life. For example, a couple of years ago, I was on a television show in Arizona, and just before the end of the show, they asked me to pick the winner of American Idol for that night. Well, I had never seen American Idol. And I thought, okay, what's the name? And so I got the name, and Jordan Sparks, and then the other gentleman. And I did not have time to go through the entire names and figure out all of the different aspects. And in looking at both sets of birth date numbers, I could see that she had great sensitivity with the twos. And also, the number six and number nine were very prominent, and the creativity of the number three. And I know from experience that people with three twos, the children cry a lot because they're very emotional. And so I picked up that one line, and I said, okay, Jordan will win if she can stop crying. Well, I didn't know she cried all the way to the finals. But anyway, so you have to take the numbers in any given situation and apply them to the individual who carries those numbers. So your granddaughter is one of those very special children, one of those crystal or rainbow, whatever, that are here for a very special purpose to help people in the new millennium. And she's going to be one of those peacekeepers, probably going to be just a great social worker, or perhaps in the healthcare field, a great teacher. So that's how we read those zeros, and it's much easier once we get to 2001 and so on, because now we have 2008.
Mm-hmm.
So that reduces to a number one in as far as the universe goes. So the whole world is experiencing a new beginning. Even though it's toward the end of this year, we are on a new beginning, and we're on our way to hopefully some better times in the future.
Okay, so if we break down, let's talk a little bit about the world, because it's really in major chaos as far as I'm concerned.
Right.
So if we break down, let's say, because everybody is worried about 2012.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so if you break down 2012, what number are you going to, you know, use to work with?
2012, of course, is going to be a 5 year, which means the number five is a very dynamic number. It's a number of change. It's a number of quick change. It can be very erratic. And I look for a lot of planetary changes in that year. And I think you had some things to say about 2012 versus perhaps 2010. I think
mm-hmm.
we talked about that. The thing is that the numbers for the future can be modified by this thing called prayer and positive thought. And certainly we cannot stop global warming. It's already begun, but we can modify it through our good thoughts and our positive behavior. So I would like to think that if people continue the positive thinking that they have shown in this past year alone, that maybe we can lessen the severity of any earth changes. People are concerned about earthquakes and floods and rising water and all of that sort of thing. But it is going to be a very dynamic year. And just as next year will be a 2 year in just a few weeks, and that's going to be a time for people to sit down and think about the new beginnings that they see around them. And then in 2 years from now, it will be a 3 year. So a lot of very creative things are going to begin in 2010. So that number three is really the number of creation. And so, and then of course in 2011, we're going to have a 4 year. I always look at that as being a year of challenges, because the number four is a work number. It's a very earthy kind of number. And so that's the way I view the coming years. But I feel better about them now than I did 2 years ago. And all because of the things that I have read about and seen on television in the past year relating to people reaching out and helping one another. I see it over and over and over, and it really makes me feel very hopeful for the future.
Yeah, I agree with you with that, Paul. I think that if people could just continue to reach out and help, basically learn how to love one another again, which somehow they've kind of forgot to do a little bit, but they are getting back to it, that would, you know, be much better. Plus, the other thing I think that people really need to do is to have that power of forgiveness, but truly, you know, when they say it, mean it.
Exactly.
Because people say, "I'm sorry," all the time, and it's like,
mm-hmm.
Well, okay, it's just a word you throw out. Just like, "I love you," you know, it's just a word you throw out. But they got to have some kind of meaning behind them, or they're not going to be worth too much just by saying them.
That's exactly true. And also, you know, you and I have been blessed by growing up at a time when we have seen a lot of things happening in the world that the newer generation has not.
Mm-hmm.
They, for example, don't have the role models available because money is so important. And so their role model has been the achievers in the electronic field, for example, and their main interest in getting an education is to get a job that pays a lot of money.
Mm-hmm.
Whereas in my time, you got a job that fit your own abilities. A lot
right.
of people were not ashamed to work with their hands, for example. And now it's called, oh, I want to make a lot of money, and I've got to do it through the computer. So I think people have to realize that good guys do not finish last. They finish first. Maybe not right away, but ultimately they do finish first.
Mm-hmm. And I agree with all that, Paul. The other thing I'd like for you to talk a little bit about are the double digits, because they're actually special numbers.
Mm-hmm. Yes, the whenever you read a number, let's say it's the number 24. Yes, that if you add them together, you get a 6. But and the way you would read the 24 is the energies of the number 2 expressing not through the number 4, but with the energies of the number 4 to give you the number 6. So we then really have to study all three numbers to see how we arrived at that 6. For example, the number 15 is also a 6, but it's a stronger number because the number 1 is the foundation number, and the number 2 is more passive than the number 1. So I would rather have a house number that was 15-6 than 24-6. So that's how you read the double digits. If you have 3-6-5, then it would be the energies of the number 3 expressing through the energies of the number 5 and the number 6. So they're all working in harmony to produce an outcome. And, of course, we know a lot of people are afraid of 666. And there's a lot of reasons historically that they are, of course. But it's really, there's nothing wrong with those three numbers. When you add them together, you get an 18-9. Most people would not handle those three sixes in a residence very well because they're very powerful.
Mm-hmm.
But the three sixes are incredibly good for the numbers for a venture headed by Mr. Al Gore because they have universal implications and compassion and creativity on a huge, huge level. So that's how you read multiple numbers.
Okay. What about the same numbers like 11, 22, 33, 44, those numbers, are they different also?
They are different because they are master numbers. The number 11, of course, is more common. So if the total of all of the vowels should be reduced to an 11, then we stop there. We don't reduce it further to a number 2. And the number 22 is a higher form of a master number, and that, of course, reduces to 4. And then, of course, the 33, that was the number of Christ. Now we're beginning to have the 44s, and looking into the future, we will have the 55s as very, very special spiritual leaders. And some people, when they spot that 11 or that 22 or whatever in their chart, and they get a little carried away with it because they think that they are a master teacher.
Mm-hmm.
It simply means that they're given those numbers to work with, and it depends on the individual's spiritual growth as to how they're going to work with those numbers. So those are different. Those master numbers are very special, and they're there to help us on our journey.
Is the set of the birthday numbers more important than the person's name set of numbers?
No. Technically, the name is the most important because that is your own personal identification. And if two people happen to be born on the same day with the same name, then, of course, we jump into astrology and we get the time of the birth. And that alters that equation very much. But where the name gives you the abilities of the individual, the karma of the individual, and, for example, the vowels tell you how an individual views the things that they create. The consonants represent the abilities. The birth date numbers are very special on their own because they deal, first of all, the total of the birth date gives you the life path number, which is the most important number in the entire chart. And the birth date numbers give you 8 different characteristics right off the bat based on the lines, horizontal or vertical. So we have a personality ingredients in the birth date, and you have personal motivation and abilities basically in the name. But they're both essential for a really complete reading.
Okay, so let's use my birth date.
Okay.
Mine is 7/30, mm-hmm. 1948.
Okay. So we go down to the far right lower, and first of all, it is, as you said, it's like a tic-tac-toe arrangement with nine squares. And lower left, you go 1, 2, 3 to the top. Middle, it's 4, 5, 6. Lower right, it's 7, 8, and 9. So you have the 7, the introspection in your life. You have the 3 of the 30, and we don't use the 0. That's your creativity. And then everyone has a 1 and a 9 in from our generation. And then you have the 4, and you have the 8. So, the 4 tells me, of course, that you are very well grounded and you're very organized and, you like system and you like, things to be, exactly right in terms of the organization. The 7 tells me that in your case, that you are very spiritually inclined and you like your solitude. Now, in another case, for example, if someone had a 7 karmic lesson and they had that 7, then I would connect the 2 dots and I'd say, okay, this person has that 7 because they need to pay attention to all of the positive aspects of the number 7. In your case, you don't need that. You've already been there and done that. The 7, 8, and 9 are complete in your configuration. So you are what we call a doer. You are an action person. You get things done when you're given an assignment. And you use your creativity by virtue of that number 3 to do it. You do not have the 2 right there in your birth date, so you've had to work on your patience in life in order to go from 1 to 3. But you have a good mind. And knowing, as I do, that you are a very good people person, or you would not be doing what you do, that number 6 is not there because it's in your full name. So just because a number is missing does not mean that there's something missing in someone's abilities. I always have to look at the individual and what their past performance has been to interpret the numbers. You have good numbers.
That's a good thing to know.
Yes.
Now, in your book, again, it is called Numbers, the Energy Forces in Your Name. You also have a chapter in there about pets.
Yes, I do.
Okay, so maybe talk a little bit about that, because I'm sure there's a lot of pet lovers listening to the show.
Well, you know, I wish that I had your ability to communicate with pets. I'm working on that, and contrary to what a lot of people might think, not every psychic is able to communicate with pets. I was told by Pythagoras that that's a very special gift. It's a different kind of energy that you have in your ability to communicate with the pets. I simply know that they react to mental pictures, and so I use mental pictures to communicate to the animals. But there have been a couple of times in my life in which I have been able to receive an absolute clear message from an animal. I had this little schnauzer dog, and I had already checked through the channeling process and found out that Sebastian was a mixed breed dog in his previous incarnation named Tina that I had. And one of the things I regret about that relationship with Tina was that I gave her to somebody at a time when I didn't feel I had the right home for her. And that and with the stipulation that they give the dog back if they could not take care of her. And this individual, instead of accepting that responsibility, eventually shipped the dog back east, and she died of a heart attack.
Aww.
So, I was playing with Sebastian, and suddenly he got very stern, and he stood there, and he just glared at me, looked right through me. And instantly, I got the message, don't you ever leave me again.
Right.
And every time I would put Sebastian in the car and go driving, he would go cuckoo if I stopped to go into a restaurant to eat. He did not want to be left behind. So sometimes they can really get that message through. But anyway, the number for all animals, regardless of their name, and by the way, we can do their charts, we can add their vowels, we can add their consonants to get their abilities. And but the number 6 is the common denominator for all domestic animals. Now, I'm not talking about the wild ones, but they all have the number 6. They do not have a separate individual life path number. Their life path number is not their birthday number, but the caregiver's life path number or birthday number, because the animal's life is the caregiver's life. They are absolutely devoted, and they, you know, we can learn from them unconditional love.
Mm-hmm.
They don't care whether they're with a homeless person on the street or in a mansion. The environment really doesn't matter to the animal. And so I found that very interesting, and I talked a lot to St. Francis about that. The answer I got regarding animal souls is that they are different from ours. They're not as refined as ours. Therefore, the animal soul, unfortunately, can never become a human soul. That is just the way the law, God's law, works. Animals do have free will. And when I talk about animals and working with them, I am talking about domestic animals. They are much higher than the wild ones. You can never domesticate a lion or a tiger. You never know when they're going to snap and turn.
Mm-hmm.
They have that kind of energy. Animals, one of the interesting questions I asked St. Francis was, do animals feel pain as we do? The answer was, they feel pain more intensely than we do. That's part of their survival technique. However, animals do not remember pain. Isn't that great? They don't remember pain.
That'd be good.
They do remember the cause of the pain.
Mm-hmm.
That's why they don't like to go into the vet. They will growl at somebody who has a stick in their hand because they remember. And also the animals reincarnate over and over, not necessarily in a sequence, but they reincarnate with their caregivers throughout eons of time. And it's been a joy for me through the channeling process with my friend Isabel when she was alive, to trace the history of one of my pets. All the way, for example, the little Schnauzer was a collie before that, and a mixed breed, and way back was a wolf.
Hmm.
And so it's interesting also that animals do not, for example, a dog will never be a cat. A cat will never be a dog. The cat will never be a bird. They do incarnate within their own species. And in terms of naming animals, again, like humans, I try to go with the intuition. And also we work with not their kennel name, not the royal name, but their call name. If it's Spot, then that's what it is.
Mm-hmm.
Because that's more, simple and personal for them.
Mm-hmm.
So, I've really learned to appreciate animals by being able to do their numbers, because the numbers fit them just as our numbers do fit us.
People ask me all the time, you know, what about my pet? And I pick up energy from pets.
Mm-hmm.
I don't try to. It just, I mean, I don't set out to do that unless I'm asked to do that.
Right.
But I find that the pet's intuition is much, much easier to reach and much, much easier to read than a human's, because they don't have the hang-ups that the humans have.
Right.
You know, so it makes it much easier for me. The other thing I'd like to know is, because, you know, usually if somebody wants to talk to a psychic, for example, they always want to know about their love life, and they're going to get one. So also in your book, you have one that there's a chapter called Compatibility in Relationships.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, by using the numbers, can you, you know, help people to find maybe the right match versus if they just kind of go on Match.com and say, okay, I want to meet you?
Yeah, absolutely. I always tell people that let's not try to create the perfect match, however, because if you do, it's going to be boring. After all, we pair up and we marry. We have relationships for the purpose of learning through experience. And you cannot learn if you're going to be with someone that's just so perfect for you that it's a boring relationship. And there are some, when I do personality profiles, for example, that's when I can find out between two people which one, for example, is very brainy versus the one that is not. Who is the leader? Who's going to be very passive? Who is more loving and caring? Who is more self-centered? Who is a really hard worker? And who is a bit on the lazy side? And so on. So the numbers can be used, but they have to be used very carefully. And I have to talk to the individual, at least one of the two, so that I can find out a bit about how they approach their own numbers. And then everything else falls into place. But I don't like to do perfect compatible numbers for people.
Well, yes, yeah, I don't really think there's any relationship that can be totally perfect, because you won't learn. You will get very bored. Now, the name of the book, again, is Numbers, the Energy Forces in Your Name. Paul, where could they get your book if they wanted it?
Well, they can go to my website, which is www.yourpersonalnumbers.com, and they can go to the page for ordering the book, and they can even preview the book through iUniverse.com, which is the publisher, to see how, if they like it, and it doesn't cost them anything. So they can order the book from iUniverse.com. They can also order it from Amazon.com. Or from Barnes & Noble or Borders Books. And when I'm doing readings for people, I will sell them the book for less money, of course, as a convenience. And that's how you can get my book.
Okay. Now, I have another question about the numerology, and then we're going to kind of get off the subject of numerology for a little bit, because there's a lot of other things I'd like to ask you about. Could you? Kind of had a lot of fun in your life so far. Anyway, you know,
yes.
When people choose their name, all right, so
mm-hmm.
Say, for example, my full name is Nancy Jeline Wallace, okay?
Mm-hmm.
The problem is I don't like Jeline. I like Jeline.
Mm-hmm.
So how would that, you know, if I use Jeline versus Jeline, how would that vary as far as the numbers go and what it means?
Well, okay. Your first name governs your physical life, your day-to-day activities. Your middle name governs your emotions. That's why everybody absolutely must have either a middle name or an initial in order to completely balance out their emotions and their life. And the last name is the least important because it is the family heritage or consciousness that you, mm-hmm. that you inherit. And the thing to remember is that we choose our name before we're born. When we're in that place called heaven and we're planning the next lifetime, we choose our parents and they have to approve the arrangement, and we also choose our siblings, etc., our career, our marriages. And then generally we get our own way. We get the name that we want, the first in the middle. But sometimes the parents win out on that little contest, and they say, no, you can't be Nancy Jolene, because you see, those numbers, those letters will carry you into circumstances that are not in harmony with what we need to do. And so you accept the Nancy Jolene, and you go on and you incarnate, and at some point you decide, you know, I really don't want to be Nancy Jolene. I want to be Marianne. And so you then go and change your name based on what you really wanted in the first place. And when you're in that place called heaven, my information is that that time frame in Earth time takes about 50 to 200 years for the average person. So we have a lot of time to get ready for that next lifetime, but not a lot of time in heavenly time, as you know. It's very fast. So that's the thing about names. We choose our own name.
Okay. So if we did, you know, if we ran numbers on, just mm-hmm. say Jolene versus Jeline, because Jeline is real, what it's on my birth certificate, but I really like Jolene. So it's J-U-L-I-N-E versus J-U-L-E-N-E.
Okay, we would have, I'm going to do some quick math here, 10, 19. 26, 8 is what we get from, doing Jolene. And if we do Jolene, then we're going to subtract 4 from that, because we're going to be using a 5 instead of a 9. And so you would wind up with a 4, a 22, 4 by using Jolene. So you see how that has changed so dramatically. Jolene being a very material number, a powerful number, a number 8. And the 22, of course, is a master number. And that's the number of the person who's working very hard in life and teaching other people. So it does, one little change makes a huge difference.
Yeah, see, I like Jolene better, so.
It's got
I mean,
a nice.
Jolene. I like yeah. Jolene better than Jolene.
Yeah, you're the 22.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, my mom decided that in her opinion because I was born in July. Like, oh, come on.
Oh, okay. Yeah. And,
now,
yeah.
Paul, do you have a phone number or email address? And again, the website. Give all that out to the listeners,
okay.
Please.
I have a toll-free number that you can call for a reading. It's 866-298-9366. That's 866-298-9366. And I have an email, which is simply, personalnumbers@gmail.com. personalnumbers@gmail.com. And you can email me if you like. Or go to my website, which is, www.yourpersonalnumbers.com.
Okay, cool. Now, the reason why I'm going to change the topic a little bit is because I'm a very strong believer in UFOs, and
ooh.
I believe they've been here for a long, long time.
Yeah.
I believe there are ETs walking the face of the earth, and I believe all those things,
mm-hmm.
but a lot of people seem to think that that's just kind of like a bunch of bull. But you've actually had a sighting of a UFO. Is that correct?
Yes.
Okay.
And that totally changed my spiritual life because, you know, I've had a lot of activity in and around Phoenix, Arizona, as opposed to, say, San Francisco. And there was a day about 20 years ago when I was visiting my mother, and she lived out on the desert. And right across the street from her home was a small hill, and the clouds were very, very low, almost like fog. And as I drove up the driveway to the main street, I looked up, and there were three other people in this truck with me. And I looked at the clouds, and I said, you know, if I didn't know better, I'd swear that little white clump at the bottom of those clouds was solid. And as soon as I said that, that little white clump, which was oval to my eye, it lit up like a light bulb, and it slid forward. And, I mean, this was as close to me as, say, a helicopter would be going overhead. It was that close. And we watched that UFO slowly dim, till there was nothing to be seen. Then I drove about a mile away to deliver my passengers to their home. And as I got out of the truck, I looked toward the end of the residential block, and there was a sphere above the trees, but below the top of the mountain behind it. And I thought, wow, that moon, that can't be the moon. It can't be the sun. And there was light emanating from the bottom of this. And I stood there and I watched this for 30 minutes as it gradually began to dim to the point where it couldn't be seen. And yet, neighbors were walking by. Nobody else saw this, but we did. And so, yeah, I have seen them up close. And I've seen them in formation many times in the Arizona sky. I saw one in San Francisco. We have a huge television tower at the on top of this mountain here. And I had an apartment, and I was looking out the back window, and I could see this light slowly descending, ever so slowly, down to the tower. And just at the point where it connected to the top of this tower, I could hear the police siren racing up the hill to go check this out. And then the light started going back up, and it disappeared. So that, I think, was a smaller craft. And later on, during a channeling session, I asked, what was that? They were attaching some sort of electronic device. And in channeling, I asked about the other UFOs I had seen really up close, and I asked if they were the same, and I was told no. No, they were two. The first one was letting me know that it was a real thing that I was watching. The second one was actually a holographic projection of a group of space travelers that were observing life on the planet. And it was actually making a turn when I saw it. So, yeah, I have seen them. I absolutely believe in them. And I like reading about them. Have you had any experience like that?
You know, I've seen things, but I couldn't say, yeah, definitely this was a UFO. I mean, I'd love to really check one out. But I do know they exist. You know, but there are people who, for some reason, think that we are the only human, you know, humans in the whole universe.
Right.
And it's like, no, no, guys, you really got a big ego if you think that's what it is.
Mm-hmm.
Now, have you been up close with an alien being?
The closest I was up, almost up close. I was visiting again my mother in Phoenix. And I went out to see a psychic who was doing a billet reading. That's where, you know, everyone present, maybe 20 people, they write their questions and they hand them to the psychic. And she did a little mini reading for me. And then she turned to me. This was on a Wednesday. She said, now, on Friday, I don't want you to leave your mother's home. Do not go anywhere. It will be dangerous for you if you do. And I said, why? She said, just be on the lookout for a man in a dark suit, wearing a hat, and he only has one arm. The other one has a gray glove on the hand, and the face is very ashen. I said, okay. So when I let Friday go by, and then Friday evening, I called my sister, and because I was visiting her while I was there, but on that Friday I did not go out. She said, you know, the strangest thing happened today. I saw this man across the street, and he had, the face was very gray, and he had on a dark suit. He only had one arm. He had a gray glove up, and he just gave me the creeps. So the next time my friend Isabel channeled, I said, what did all of that mean? And she said, this space being needed your body because your vibration was exactly what he needed to stay in this atmosphere for a longer period of time. I said, well, how would he accomplish that? And the answer was he had a hypodermic needle. Hmm. So I was fortunately not up that close, but if things had worked out differently, I would have been, and it would not have been too nice.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that would not have been cool at all. Why do you think that the UFOs go more like, say, by Arizona rather than, say, Chicago? I mean, now we did have a sighting here in Chicago, mm-hmm. I think it was October, which kind of baffled a lot of people out by Midway Airport. But we did, you know.
Well,
but mostly they're way out by the Southwest.
Right. I think partly it's because of the military bases and the nuclear facilities. Certainly Las Vegas has gotten a lot of activity. But when I would visit in Phoenix and I would look up at the night sky and I could see formations way up there, kind of like you would see a satellite, except that when you see three or four or six of these lights and they all zigzag in formation, I said, that is not any other kind of an aircraft. I saw that many times,
mm-hmm.
many times.
So, yeah, I always find UFOs very fascinating. And I just, you know, there's a lot of people that I've interviewed that talk about UFOs. So I was like, oh, man, cool. I really like that.
Well, I have a space being that used to visit me, and he was from Mars, and his name was Claytor. I could not see him, but my little Sebastian, the Schnauzer, Sebastian could see him, mm-hmm. and he would bark ferociously at this apparition, which I could not see, but he could see him all the time.
Mm-hmm.
And I once asked in channeling if I had ever been a space being. And they said, yes, you had a lifetime. You were a space being, and you traveled to the center of the Earth. So a lot of us, you see, have been space beings and are very well connected with them. And I was glad to know that space beings protect us. The good ones are really in charge, and they send energies to areas that have problems with growing their crops, for example. So they're really caretakers of this planet.
Mm-hmm. That's kind of neat. I suppose somebody's trying to take care of us.
Yeah.
I have one more question for you,
yeah.
Paul, and then when you know, because we have about 7 minutes left.
Right.
But do you use the numbers to predict future events?
I use the numbers to look at future influences. And there are times when it's just there so strong that I know what's going to happen, and I don't talk about it.
Mm-hmm.
But for the most part, they are influences, and they're subject always to change. I have a computer program that prints out a person's full name and birth date, like a life script from the day they're born till the age of 100.
Mm-hmm.
But again, these are all influences, and they are subject to change.
I think it's important that people understand that they are subject to change, that through a lot of prayer, a lot of belief, and a lot of good positive thinking, a lot of things can be changed.
Right.
Now, Paul, one more time, can you give out all the information, the name of your book, how to get it, your website,
okay,
your phone number, all of it?
My book is called Numbers, The Energy Forces in Your Name. It's a soft cover, and you can get it by going to my website at www.yourpersonalnumbers.com, and you can also get it through Amazon.com, or Barnes & Noble can order, and so can Borders. Or you can call me at 866-298-9366, and I'll be happy to make sure that you get one at a reduced rate.
Now, you also do a radio program.
Yes, I do a radio program every Wednesday at 6 o'clock Eastern Time, and I do that on the Ask One Radio Network, and I do it from for 1 hour. It's from 6 to 7 o'clock Eastern Time.
And the name of it?
And the name of it is New Frontier Numbers. And the New Frontier basically means New Millennium. It's New Frontier Numbers. And so I'd be happy to talk to you anytime.
Do you think that we, as a whole, human race here on Earth, have grown as much as we were expected to grow by this period of time?
I don't think so, truly. I think we dropped the ball way back when, in the very beginning, and I feel that is why we have things, we have so much violence and anger in the world. I believe that when we dropped the ball, it affected the animal kingdom as well, because they are subject to us. And so, prior to today, in the very beginning, animals were not cannibals. They ate vegetables and things.
Mm-hmm.
But we sort of invented anger because of our free will. And, consequently, we're still paying for that. So we do have quite a ways to go yet.
Now, you said that animals can't be human. Can humans, if they don't learn what they're supposed to learn, drop down to the animals?
No, they that's an entirely different energy. And God, you know, has everything set up so that there's a system and a law for everything. So, no, contrary to what they believe in India, those cows walking around are not occupied by human souls. And as far as I'm concerned, there are a lot of animals that are more highly evolved than a lot of people.
I think so, too. That's why I was asking.
Yes.
The thing about Roswell out in New Mexico.
Yes.
Do you think that there was really a crash? Do you think that it's a big cover-up like they're saying? Or do you think it's just a big, you know, myth?
No, absolutely, there was a crash. And there are bodies being kept in the frozen condition by, and also spacecraft that have crashed, not only by the United States, but by Russia and England. And so there's a lot going on that we have never been told officially. So, yes, I do believe in all of that.
Why do you think they're here to observe us?
Well, I think, given our behavior with atomic toys, I think they want to make sure that we don't get carried away with those. And so I do believe that other space civilizations, their representatives, have been in contact with our leadership in Washington and in the Pentagon. And so, of course, it's the president's prerogative to go and look at those things. And if I were the president, that would be my first priority. I'd want to go and look at Hangar 51.
Mm-hmm.
I understand that not all of our presidents have been that Ronald Reagan, for example, was not interested in looking. I find that very interesting.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Maybe he already knew the truth.
It could be.
It might be. You know what, Paul? Our time is up. It's been a very, very great show today.
Thank you.
And one quick time, give out your phone number, the name of your book, your website, email again.
All right. Numbers, the energy forces in your name is the book. And call me at 866-298-9366. I'll go to my website, which is simply www.yourpersonalnumbers.com. And I really, really enjoyed being on your show, Nancy. You're a great host, and
well, thank you.
Very knowledgeable.
Well, thanks for being on the show. I'm sure a lot of people who are listening found what you had to say to be very enlightening. So, Paul, thank you very much, and have a great week.
Thank you. You too. Bye-bye.
You're very welcome. I'd like to thank you, the listeners. I hope you enjoyed the show as much as I did. Hope that you learned something from it. May God bless all of you. Have a great week, and we'll talk next week. Take care. Bye now.